This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free, and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot, so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful-looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. These are some of the oddest, craziest, scariest moments many of us have ever experienced. If you're sick, you're hopefully going to recover quickly. But the global economy is now very much under the weather, so to speak, and it is not at all clear when it will get better. Businesses are shuttered and many won't open again, or if they do, probably come back in a different way. The digital signage and digital out-of-home sectors are hit just like everything else, and this virus is going to take out companies the way it is taking out hundreds and thousands of people. I want to spend the next few episodes talking to smart industry people about what they're hearing and seeing, as well as what they're doing. First up is Chris Riegel, who runs what is now the Stratacache Group of Companies. We've spoken in the past, but I wanted to speak with Chris again because he's very smart, well-traveled and connected, and always has an ear to the ground. So Chris, I know you're up in your bunker in Dayton, Ohio. What are you seeing out there? I know you have a fairly unique point of view on all this because you're into multiple companies, you're servicing a bunch of markets, different kinds of markets, and Stratacache in its various versions does everything from consulting to manufacturing.
So I think what we would say we're seeing is a seize up of probably 40 to 50% of the economy. With the virus out there, you're seeing an economic wave, tsunami, I think would be the proper phrase, where a lot of businesses, whether that be banks, whether that be QSR, whether that be retail, hospitality, gaming, movie theaters, et cetera, with everybody shut down, a lot of those businesses are extremely severely impacted. And I have a significant concern from an economic perspective that while this virus is very bad and there's a huge public health issue around it, the economic crisis that could come from it is as bad or worse. And that's going to have profound changes both to the way society works, as well as retail and entertainment, other things, but to our industry as well.
Mm-hmm. A lot of what you do is kind of targeting the very large enterprise accounts, whether that's retail banking, QSR, any number of things like that. Are they in any less of a pickle than a small business maybe, or can they ride this thing out?
Well, it's a great question. We have plus or minus 400,000 sites in North America alone, but also all around the world, up to about 1 million sites where we see at the retail, at the banking, at the QSR, at the hospitality levels, kind of the health of the customer. What I would say now is even in a large company, a large QSR, a large hospitality chain, you've got a lot of independent operators within. Mm-hmm. And I think that just today, hopefully, the bill is passing Congress to help with emergency funding for some of these businesses. But I was talking to one QSR customer who's on the smaller side of revenue per unit. And a gentleman was saying he owns 600 locations. In those 600 locations, he's been shut down for 10 days, fully shut down. You go to the government saying, hey, go to SBA to try to take out a loan to bring your business back, and the website crashes. The website forms are dictated that you'll get a loan if you have assets. In his particular business model, there's very light assets. Mm-hmm. So I think there's going to be mass closure in some sectors of business. Big companies have lobbyists, small companies don't. So a lot of these businesses that I think everyone serves kind of live on the margin. And while I know the government is trying to help and trying to do the right thing, what Stalin, what Lenin, what Hitler could not do in the past 80 years, our own government has done in the last 10 days.
Hmm. If you're a QSR operator, as an example, the theory would be you can still operate. You have a pickup window. You can do delivery, Uber Eats, and that sort of thing. And in drive-through, some of these operations, say 60, 70% of their business is through the drive-through anyways. But I'm sensing it's probably not that simple, and that people are quarantined. They're not going out, so they're not going to the drive-through.
Yeah, it's really interesting because we serve 7 of the top 10 QSRs in North America at scale. I have QSR customers that are down significantly. I have some that are holding their own to slightly up and taking market share. You have the problem in QSR. Normally, plus or minus 70% of the business goes through the drive-through, but you have challenges now where crew is refusing to work. QSR is typically minimum wage or slightly above. And in many of those environments, crew members are scared for their own health. You're mm-hmm. typically, especially in the U.S., not given health benefits there. So besides the political angles, pro or con around that, you've got crew that are just refusing to come to work. And that is forcing staffing challenges, forcing production challenges, but it's having a profound effect industry-wide.
And a lot of these companies that are out there, they're on subscription arrangements with digital signage software companies and other technology companies for other cloud-based services. In many cases, they're on 2 or 3 year agreements that, in theory, negate their ability to just say, sorry, I don't need it this month or anything else. Like they're on the hook for it. But do they have the ability? Are there outs that would allow them not to, pay you guys or other companies?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it comes to, on the provider side, as we are in our case, we're working with several customers on forbearance. So, hey, if your restaurant's closed for the next 30 days and I have digital menu boards in your restaurant, we'll work with you on relief for that time period, because your long-term health and our long-term health are intertwined. I am seeing through our StrataCash Capital division a number of inquiries where we're seeing providers, especially in the SaaS world, that are calling us to be acquired because they're seeing mass cancellations from their customer base in SaaS, where even if you have a contract for a year or two or three, especially in that smaller SaaS space, the independent restaurants, the C-stores, et cetera, if they're shut down, they just turn it off and say, hey, sorry, I'm not going to pay you. You're not mm-hmm. going to file legal action to collect a $20 a month bill. So we are hearing stories from several of the SaaS providers in the industry that have come knocking on our door of their experiencing severe, severe downturn of customers just not being willing to pay for the services.
And why are they coming to you?
They're coming to us to sell, quite frankly.
Right. But why you? Is because you have the capital wing, there's the understanding that in theory, you're acquisitive and you may pick them up?
Correct. I think we've done 17 acquisitions in the last 14 years. We have cash and we're in a very good position financially to ride out the storm.
So you talked about forbearance and all that. I mean, if you're providing relief and this thing goes on for 3-4 months, maybe even longer, please God, no. But if it does, is that kind of goodwill, so to speak, sustainable for you?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think when you're working with customers, they never remember the time you did them a favor, but they never forget the time that you didn't. So yeah. I think you have to be kind of pragmatic to say, and especially with the brands that we work with, we're working with them on a relationship and on a long-term partnership. If it's, hey, I'm willing to eat a month or 2 months of service, and you understand that when the chips are down, that we stood by you, helped your business. Hopefully that translates to goodwill long-term. There's not a line on the tax form or on the P&L for goodwill as it goes to customer relations. But I think it is the time when you forge those relationships that say, hey, we're here to help.
Mm-hmm. This seems a little Darwinian, but when you talk about all these companies coming your way saying, hey, we'd be interested in selling, it's at the worst possible time. And there's a degree of natural selection here where, you and I and many others have talked about the glut of companies out there and the cull that was going to come. And is this finally that moment?
The moment really started, strangely enough, in January. We started to get a reasonable number of calls after January 1st. Many of the companies, especially in the SaaS portion of the business in this industry, that are on the entry level or the low price side are still angel funded or single individual funded. Mm-hmm. So we started to see staff Jan one calls from investors that said, hey, you know, I've been in this 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, and I really don't see an end point or an end game to it. We'd like to talk. So originally that was on our side set for discussions at ISE or on a number of discussions. When the virus started to break out, then those talks accelerated, and it's really surprising the number of companies in this space that live on a very thin margin and a model that's not sustainable unless money is being pumped into them. So now that's just, this has accelerated that state quite a bit.
Are there companies that you're hearing about that actually do raise your eyebrows, or in most cases it's like, there's no real value for me there?
Yeah, there's a number of bottom feeders in this industry that if we said X and Y and Z, everybody would be like, oh yeah, we know those guys, that are selling on the non-sustainable model. There's a surprising number, I'd call them five or six mid-tier companies on a global basis that are on our radar that are in the same kind of boat of having run out of money and really needing to make a transition quickly that might not be on everybody's radar.
So why doesn't it work for so many other than the simple fact that there's so many?
You know, I'm a dropout. I never completed college because I decided to go chase a dream. But you don't have to have a Harvard MBA to figure out that if you're selling a SaaS service at less than your cost to provide it, long term, that doesn't work. And I think that there's a lot of businesses, whether it be in the enterprise side, whether it be in the digital out of home side, that said, geez, this model is going to work great when we get scale. The problem is markets and customers are always slower than you think they're going to be in adoption. And many of these businesses have never hit that critical mass that's required to then have that business model work. The model could work potentially if the scale was up by a factor of 10 or 20, but that's never materialized.
Mm-hmm. And is that kind of scale possible?
I mean, we're operating north of 3.5 million signs in the field today for customers. The scale's out there. And I think that with the cost of display continuing to drop, the scale will continue to grow. It's more, are you going to run a smart business? Are you going to do the right strategic things to position properly in the market versus going out and buying business? Buying business never works long term. You can do it for a deal here, a deal there, but we're see announcements from us in the next several weeks about a couple of pretty significant wins where customers had previously bought lower cost solutions and entry level low cost because it was cheap and easy. And geez, a year into it, they found out that cheap and easy don't really work that well. So I think customers are seeing as the market matures, do you want to go into a risk factor or do you want to have a business partner that's going to be with you in the long term?
Mm-hmm. I've always said for a long time that probably the most important question that you can ask if you're going to issue an RFP is what's the financial state of the company? Never mind its features and functions and all the, you know, pretty pictures and all that. Like, will you be around for 3 to 5 years? I suspect that's really in play now.
I would agree. And there's also the backdrop of the change happening on the global display business. So as the Chinese have pushed in very, very heavily to the market, and the Chinese are coming at the market with governmental backing that this is a strategic industry that they are going to dominate on the glass side. That is a very, very tough battle. The two main Korean suppliers are in the market that everybody knows. For years and years, had one specifically of those suppliers had been sloshing around a lot of money to promote their interests. with the Chinese onslaught that's happened in the last 6 months, 12 months, and is continuing, their Koreans are starting to be pushed out of that business pretty aggressively. So there's a sea change there that's also changing the landscape. And we operate in 30 markets around the world at scale. The rules have changed. The engagements have changed because the margins, especially on the glass side, are now compressing. And that changes some of the players. That changes some of the alliances in the greater war.
With the Chinese companies, though, they don't tend to market their own product. They, you know, they're manufacturing all these displays, but they're coming out under somebody else's badges. Do you see that changing?
I see the domestic Chinese market different than the rest of the world. If you take BOE and they're the 600-pound gorilla in the room, they not typically market on a global basis, but inside China, as their domestic market, they increasingly dominate that space. Will you see them brand in the way a Samsung or LG have on a global side? Probably not. They're content with selling a lot of glass through others. And that's the type of alliance that when we signed our partnership with them in January strategically, we like, because we're not competing with our supply chain at that point.
And you don't have that another layer of a panel manufacturer putting their badge on there and paying, you know, 10, 15 points on top of it, right?
Yeah, it's one less layer of margin stacking, and such that we from the Stratocash side are in the software and services business. If glass is commoditized, and it's always been a commodity, but it's becoming even more so commoditized, that's fine. I'm about controlling, managing, and optimizing what goes on that screen and the usefulness of that screen. If I can help the customer drop the price of that glass by 40%, great. That just makes projects go bigger and faster.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
I wondered about technology budgets from medium to large companies, enterprise level companies that maybe had digital display on their plans for 2020, 21. And this all happened. And they're now seeing most or a lot of their workforce working from home and thinking, okay, the tech budget that we had for displays on premises, we now need to allocate to video conferencing, those kinds of tools. Is my theory correct? Are you seeing that?
I think it's partially correct. So in our X2O business, we have virtual classroom and some really great utilities and platforms there for virtual collaboration. We've seen in the last 6 weeks an absolute explosion in that business, which is great. It's tremendous demand. That being said, from a customer perspective, the enterprise side, we're seeing, and I'll use the example of banking or QSR retail, the digital signs that might have been in place that were customer facing previously are now employee facing or crew facing because the locations are closed to consumers, but they're helping the companies keep the messaging to the staff and to the crew, keep their heads in the game. So I kind of think that it will actually be somewhat different where, even though there are a lot of people working from home today, as we return to some form of normalcy, the importance of communicating to employees and associates has just been heightened by this whole thing. And I think that you'll see a greater resurgence, greater acceleration of digital signage as a whole. And you see the kind of agility. We have customers in many sectors where we're changing content now at a much higher rate, faster rate during the crisis because the customers are dealing with changing events. And we're seeing a lot of customers that are saying, geez, I now actually understand the value of this stuff because it's not paper. It's not taking me 6 weeks to get it out there. I can change this across 6,000 stores in an hour. Yes, sir. That's why you pay us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I've said on many podcasts and written about it that I think the long tail in workplace communications and signage in general really is all the stuff that's out of view of quote unquote customers and, you know, manufacturing facilities and production facilities and, you know, back of house in hotels and everything else where you somehow need to communicate to staff. And now when you're having to tell them, for God's sakes, make sure you wash your hands for 20 seconds and so on, it gets really, really important.
I mean, you're in an age today where everybody has a supercomputer on their hip and has access to visual display that way. However, that is, as certain people would call it, in cases fake news or uncontrollable from the company's perspectives, the ability to say, hey, I'm at company XYZ and we're going to do a shutdown, a furlough, a RIF, here's a new health policy, here's a new X or Y or Z thing that I need to get out to the masses. Having those screens in place and having that agility to be able to communicate out to the masses in your format, at your speed, in front of that consumer, in front of that associate when they need it is a powerful tool.
Mm-hmm. What kind of adjustments have you had to make with your businesses?
So in one of our manufacturing businesses, we're effectively paused because of the stay-at-home orders. So we've had about a 3% adjustment in staff. However, as we're slowing here a hair because of the U.S. economy and everything, just getting quiet, China's back online now, and we have the benefit as a global company to be able to shift production, shift demand, shift supply across multiple facilities. So where the U.S. has slowed a bit, China's picking up and ramping up. And I think you'll start to see the rest of the world, hopefully in the coming weeks, come out of this condition as well.
They're interesting times. You know, I'm on LinkedIn most days and looking at stuff and I see a lot of thoughts and prayers and we're with you sort of messaging, which I think is good. And then I see some where people are clearly pitching and trying to jump on what they see as an opportunity. And it seems a little distasteful. Do you have to do a bit of a delicate dance when you see opportunity out there with all this?
If I take an example of like our X2O team where we're selling high engagement, virtual collaboration, virtual classroom technology. We're out talking to business leaders about being able to connect to their teams globally in high def video on key design, key engineering, key topics. We haven't varied the pitch. We haven't said, geez, you need to do this because of COVID-19. But the clear understanding is, hey, when we're talking to you about how important it is to be able to continue business if travel is restricted, if something like this happens, you know, this is what the fourth pandemic in the last 15, 20 years. I would pray it's the last, but I suspect it's not. This just highlights the fact that tech can be incredibly helpful. As a hypothetical, if this were 1980 as opposed to 2020, could you work from home doing your job? Could you do 95% of things that you can do now with minimal disruption? No. So the economy has evolved. The way people connect and work has evolved, and it's still continuing, albeit at maybe a lesser effective rate. And there's some problems out there, no doubt. But it's pretty damn amazing to think, if you take the U.S. and Canada, that you just had 360 million people that were told don't show up to work. And the work's still getting done. The things are still moving forward. It's not been an absolute stop.
Yeah, I imagine if this was, you know, even 1995 and we were all trying to get things done on 256K modems.
God forbid if this were AOL. That being said, I think we'll all learn a lot of lessons from this and continue to evolve the businesses and continue to evolve the human existence. But I just hope it goes back to normal as soon as possible.
I was talking to Mark McDermott from ScreenCloud on the podcast that's up right now, and spoke a little bit about the work from home dynamic and not being able to message to people in workplaces right now, and the idea of being able to push stuff to desktops, get people to have something of a dynamic screensaver or pop-up windows or whatever that's going to come up on screen. Do you see that as something that's workable?
I think it's possible, but I think that the challenge that you have, at least that we see in our business, and we're 1,100 people in 28 countries, it's keeping team continuity and keeping the ability to put information in front of someone is great, making sure that they're consuming it and making sure that you have cohesive communication are different challenges in that environment. So being able to get the data there is helpful, but it's does that just become so much more noise where everybody is data rich and information starved?
You invest quite a bit of money, or historically have invested quite a bit of money into trade shows, and trade shows are obviously at a full stop right now and maybe for some time. Is this the big reckoning moment for trade shows in general, or do you see them coming back?
So I think there are many things that you can accomplish at a trade show, but there were certainly too many of them and too generic. I think this will be the thinning of the herd for sure in the trade show world. We're estimating that at least through Q3, most trade shows this year are pretty much shot. Will they come back next year? The thought of walking NRF in the Javits Center is a little bit spooky these days.
But it's occupied at the moment.
It is occupied at the moment. Hopefully it will be clear by then.
Yeah, I hope so.
That being said, I think that there are connections that you can make at trade shows with customers that could be important. But think of, and let's use NRF as the straw man in the discussion, NRF, and we've done the show 20 plus years, it's a gauge of the health of the retail industry. And you have similar in QSR and casino and other. But if the retail industry is taking the type of lumps it's taking now, what will NRF 2021 be like, and what will that set in terms of the agenda? I think it's a real transitional period in retail as a whole, based on what's been triggered in the last several weeks. And it'll be really interesting in many cases at those shows where we go in, spend millions of dollars to prepare for the shows, try thought leadership, try how do we position solutions for the year. But the best opportunity for us is learning and talking to 300, 400, 500 customers. What's important to you? What are the key drivers of your business? And that's information intelligence you can't get many other ways.
You mentioned a couple of times the X2O product, and X2O started off doing broadcast graphics and then went into signage and so on. And now they have this, could you describe it, because you're going to do a better job than me?
Absolutely. So X2O has a virtual classroom and virtual collaboration tool that if you go to YouTube and you look at the Harvard online learning experience, the Harvard virtual classroom, that's based on X2O technology. The X2O experience is having a fully engaged, fully immersive digital classroom that is that tier above the Skype or the Cisco Telepresence or the old HP Halo type system, where I need to have full video of every person that I'm engaged with, a fully interactive, fully collaborative session with full feedback. It's taking the level of what could be a less than optimal video conference environment to a fully optimized, high def, high engagement level. And when you're doing precise, hey, maybe I'm an auto manufacturer manufacturing a car and doing design, and we need to tweak this or that, I need everybody looking at the exact same thing from 10 points around the world or 20 points around the world simultaneously and making changes to that we can all see and comment on. It's taking that collaborative experience to the next level.
Is that a tool set that could be in theoretically applied to sales and product knowledge and kind of doing the kind of virtual trade show that has been talked about but has never really happened?
Yeah, I mean, we use it internally for events. We use it internally for collaboration among teams. What we find is that, you know, humans are inherently visual animals. So if I can't see someone, sometimes on a conference call or a low fidelity WebEx, yes doesn't mean yes. It means maybe or no. I want to be able to see someone, look them in the eyes and see is yes, yes, or is yes, no, and be able to work through complex problems. And having that experience as if I'm right across the table from you is much more effective than trying to do that in a who just dialed in, okay, what are we starting, what are we talking about conference jungle line.
Mm-hmm. Are there companies that are in theory in a position to succeed based on what's going on that, you know, they don't want to sound callous or anything about this, but, you know, is this actually a good moment for some people?
In the digital signage industry or in general? I think.
Well, certainly if you manufacture masks or ventilators, it's a big deal right now, but yeah, that's not what I mean.
Yeah, for sure. I think in the digital signage industry, this event will drive significantly more consolidation. Maybe it further helps to thin the herd of those in the business with suicidal tendencies on pricing and execution models. So I think that's probably not a bad thing. I think that you'll also see more interaction and more evolution towards signage systems that tie back to sensors or intelligence or other things. You'll see more evolution in experiences whereby which signage is tying into automation systems for, hey, is someone coming through this airport lobby and they might be running a temperature, could be sick. Where do I need to go as efficiently as possible to get out of this environment as quickly as I can? I think you'll see evolution of more intelligence into the signage world coming from this.
Yeah, I would think if you're not able to offer a high level of data integration and work with sensors and all those things right now, you're just not current.
What, and I think you'll start to see as well, you know, we're kind of right at the cusp of the transition between LCD and LED technologies. With LED technologies, and we'll be making a pretty significant announcement in the next several weeks around that, you're going to see more next-gen devices for visual display where sensors are embedded, where the form and capability and application of display is going to change quite dramatically to have it more kind of natively integrated into the customer's experience. So the traditional piece of glass in a 16x9 format on the wall is going to change quite a bit.
Now, you haven't traditionally done that much in the way of large format stuff, at least not that I'm familiar with. You know, big walls in shopping malls and office tower lobbies and so on. That seems to be more the you know, it's a specialty thing. It's a niche thing because there's not a whole bunch of software licenses or anything out of that. Do you see a point where that's going to be a high volume opportunity?
Yeah, I think the LED business, if I'm looking at billboards or looking at those street spectaculars, and I go to China 5-6 times a year, there's 100,000 plus LED manufacturers in China fighting for that business. That is an absolute dog-eat-dog market and very, very difficult. But when you get into the indoor, when you get into the more specialty display, there is a tremendous opportunity as it comes to some of the new forms and some of the emerging things that you'll see in LED, obviously, that you've been tracking, that will open up non-traditional environments. And think of it as the craft brewer versus Anheuser-Busch InBev. There's a lot of interesting niches that have legs in the marketplace that I think you'll see us and others start to pursue.
Yeah, I think it's an architectural design consideration in most respects, and the designers are just starting to wrap their heads around it.
Unfortunately, for the last 15, 20 years in the digital signage industry, too much of it has been driven by consumer electronics and the TV variant. That's now no longer a precept moving forward, and that just creates a whole new series of creative palettes, creative things, creative ideas, and new business models that can be unlocked as the technology is really evolving and emerging. Hmm.
Is it kind of weird to be in your office for weeks on end because you travel almost constantly?
It has been a bit of an adjustment, probably for my wife and kids more than me.
Who are you?
But it is interesting, and there's a lot of it's amazing how much work you can get done when you're actually in the office.
Yeah, I bet. All right, Mr. Eagle, thank you. Stay healthy.
Thank you, sir.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.